just not gonna taste my venom. I got that adrenaline momentum, momentum, not throwing with them, never gonna slow up in them, ready to snap any momentum, thinking it's time to go get them, they ain't gonna know what hit them, when they get beat with the venom. I got that adrenaline momentum. Knock, knock, let the podcast in. It's Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me, as always, is an alien symbiote who's kind of a loser back on his home planet.
Mike DiCruccio.
How you doing today, Mike?
You know, I was doing great, and then you just slammed me right there. But
I feel like.
But I guess I'll pull through.
I feel like you got to be used to that at this point. And also joining us is a returning guest of the podcast, and we asked him back because the reason he came on in the first place was to talk about the trailer for this movie when it came out. It's Vin Craig. How you doing, Vin?
I can't believe you got Eminem for this podcast to do the intro.
I know, right? It sounded
I didn't know we had that kind of budget.
Yeah, I blew it all on the Eminem intro. That's really... It was worth it to me.
Now, there's all those copyright fees because they sued you for taking the song off of YouTube, right?
yeah, pretty much. Now, if you've ever listened to Film Bookcast before, first we start with some film news and then move on into some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately. Today, Vin's going to be joining us. After that, we move on into our featured review. This week, we are discussing the latest film from director Ruben Fleischer, Sony's big attempt to create a Spider-Man universe of films without Spider-Man and the Secret Life sequel, it's Venom.
They tried their best.
Now, are you guys excited to dig into Venom? I mean, there was a varying degrees of excitement for this movie, I feel like, among the three of us, from what I can gather. Yeah. Mike, I don't think you were excited for Venom at all.
Nope.
Okay. And Vin, I know you were, like, pretty stoked for Venom.
Like most movies, yes, I was very excited that this existed.
You're just happy there's moving images on a screen.
I can't believe we cracked that code.
Are there bright lights? I'm in.
Does Venom say pussy in the movie? I'm in.
Yeah, fair.
Sorry, spoiler.
And for me, you know, I was kind of not really looking forward to Venom, but like I was kind of on the basis that I enjoy comic books and I enjoy Spider-Man ancillary characters. So I'm like, yeah, sure, fuck it, Venom, why not? So we all have different perspectives going into the movie, and it'll be really interesting to see how we all reacted to the movie once we talk about it. But we'll do that in a little bit. Right now, we got to get into some film news.
Hi, it's Cyborg.
What?
All right, it's time for film news here on Film Bookcast, and we begin, of course, with some Marvel news because it's Film Bookcast, and we always begin with whatever Marvel news happens. And I actually wanted to start with this because this was announced like 2 or 3 weeks ago, but it happened while we were recording the last episode of Film Bookcast, so we had to talk about it. Like, Mike, you texted me as soon as we finished recording saying, like, God damn it.
I was so mad when I opened Twitter.
And that is a pretty big get for Disney's new streaming service. There's going to be some Marvel TV shows coming on Disney streaming service, and that's something we probably could have figured out on our own. But now we actually know what's going to be the subject of those shows, and at the very least, there's going to be a show centered around Scarlet Witch and a show centered around Loki, plus more shows based on other Marvel characters that are getting their own shows on Disney streaming service. So, guys, what do you think of this? Are you a fan of this idea of taking some of these minor Marvel characters and expanding their roles with these, like, kind of mini-series TV shows?
I challenge the idea that these are minor Marvel characters. Loki's been a villain in, like, 5 of their movies.
Okay, but they're not...
And a hero in the rest.
Yeah. Like...
But they're not making a Loki movie, you know what I mean? Like,
no,
not Loki...
that's fair.
So that's
I don't
why
know,
he
man.
Gets a
Did
TV
you
show.
See Thor 1?
That's fair. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Also fair. But yeah, and also this raises the question, you know, Loki kind of, spoiler alert, died in Infinity War. So is this going to be a prequel about Loki or something? Because, like, I know it seems like most of the deaths in Infinity War are probably going to get reversed, but the Loki one seemed like it was probably going to stick, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be weird to see them try to handle... Because for right now, the TV universe has been part of, but distinctly separate from the movie universe. So to take these movie characters and give them a TV show, like, how do you handle that? Is it going to be like some other Earth thing. Like, what, are they going to start pulling that comic bullshit?
I don't think they're going to do that. It sounds like Kevin Feige is directly involved with these shows, too, as opposed to the TV shows that they've been doing in the past, where, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Daredevil or the Netflix shows and stuff like that, like, he has no involvement in. This seems like it's going to be really tied into the Marvel movie universe that they've already established. So, you know, I'm into it. I like the idea of, like, I'm always down for more Marvel stuff. But it just makes me, like, upset that I have to pay for another streaming service to watch them.
Yeah. My gut reaction... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Vin.
No. I was going to say do what I do, which is I pay for Netflix and VRV, and I trade those passwords with people who pay for Hulu and, like,
right.
other stuff. You know, creating like a small crime ring.
Yeah. Yes. Can I say I like that your two must have streaming services are Netflix and VRV.
Anime AOE, anime over everything, baby.
Yeah,
if it's not a cartoon, I don't want to watch it.
Is it even worth it then? My gut reaction to reading this was can't wait to torrent these TV shows. Because I'm hesitant to support a Disney streaming service on principle anyway, because, like, they just own the entertainment industry now.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
But also then, like, you're going to take these cool things that everybody loves and basically hold them hostage on this other thing. Like, fuck you, I'm out. Kind of gut reaction.
Yeah, but I don't know. It seemed like this was the way it was going to go anyway. And, like, you know, as long as the shows are good, like, I'm probably going to get in on this. And I'll probably end up watching the Scarlet Witch Loki show and whatever other Marvel show they come up with. Because I haven't really been the biggest fan of the Netflix shows. But I feel like under Kevin...
Yeah, I don't need more hour-long dramas in my life.
Exactly. But something that has, like, a Disney budget with, like, you know, these fantastical characters that we're already really attached to, that have the opportunity to really tie into the universe, like, yeah, I'm pretty into it. So we'll see what happens with those shows. Other Marvel news that I did want to bring up is...
Ooh, wait, hot take real quick before we move on.
Go for it.
I really hope they touch on the incest angle with Scarlet Witch.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I hope that we get to see Aaron Taylor Johnson. I hope he's back in full swing, asking people if they saw that coming. and I really hope that they do an episode. Were you guys Pokemon fans by chance?
I watched Pokemon when I was a wee lad. Yes.
Do you remember the episode where you saw, like, Meowth learn to talk?
I actually do remember that. Yes.
Thank God, because for my next point, I'd like to reference that episode.
Sure, go for it.
I hope they do an episode like that where you see Wanda lose the accent.
Oh, my God.
Like, they do an episode that takes place between Civil War and Infinity War,
right.
Just of her, like, listening to, like, doing speech therapy, like, walking around with, like a CD player, because that's the only thing, like, that had this available. I don't know. It could be fun.
Yeah, that could be very fun. I like that idea. We'll put a pin in that for now. if Disney, if you're listening, that's up for grabs. In other Marvel news, by the way, I did want to bring this up. There's a new movie they're coming out with. Doesn't have a date or anything, but it looks like they're going to make The Eternals into a movie. And they just hired a director to do that. Chloe Zhao, who directed The Rider, which came out this year. And The Rider was a very small, intimate drama that got incredible reviews. I have not watched it yet. It's in my Netflix queue as of this point. But I've heard it's amazing.
And they said, give that woman a space movie.
Yeah.
intimate drama. She's perfect.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I feel like this is a practice that has happened a lot with male directors over the past few years. Like, Colin Trevorrow did, you know, that small little safety net guaranteed quirky indie comedy. Give that man Jurassic World. you know?
And that worked out great.
I mean, they made every dollar, so...
It did make a lot of money. And, you know, sometimes it does actually work out really well. I mean, Gareth Edwards did Monsters and then went
for
on
sure.
to Godzilla and Rogue One. So, like, you know, it can work. And Chloe Zhao seems like a really talented filmmaker. And The Eternals, I don't know that much about, but it seems like now that Guardians of the Galaxy 3 has been kind of put on hold, Marvel wants their own little they want their space opera.
Why? Did something happen to James Gunn?
You know... we were actually...
We can cut that out later.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how to break this to you, man, but some bad stuff has went down. We'll talk about that in a bit, actually. But The Eternals is the space opera, and it seems like Marvel wants to keep that train rolling. So as long as Guardians of the Galaxy 3 isn't immediately happening, this seems like it could fill the void.
Yeah, I mean, sure, why not, like, at this point? You know, we here at Film Bookcast are always excited for Marvel movies,
sure.
So...
That's kind of our slogan.
Yeah.
Not that we're shills or anything. We just... We tend to enjoy them. But anyway, let's move on from Marvel news and go on to the next thing, which is that, as you may know, Danny Boyle was supposed to be making James Bond 25. He was attached to that movie for a while, and he dropped out a few weeks ago due to creative differences. But somebody else has jumped on, and it's someone that's kind of surprising. Cary Fukunaga is directing the new James Bond. If you don't know that name, he directed the first season of True Detective. That was kind of his big claim to fame. But he also did Sin Nombre and Jane Eyre, Beasts of No Nation.
He came this close to doing It.
Yes, he was very close to doing It, and he actually dropped out of It because of creative differences. So it's incredible to me that he's jumping onto James Bond 25 right after Danny Boyle has dropped out due to creative differences. So I'm pretty excited about this, though. I mean, Cary Fukunaga is a great director. He just came out with a new miniseries on Netflix called Maniac, which I have not watched yet, but stars Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, and I've heard it's pretty good.
Do you know where you are right now?
I'm in a drug trial.
What do you think is wrong with you?
I'm sick. I don't matter.
What would you say this trial is showing you about yourself?
Is this therapy now?
It's not therapy. It's science.
So, yeah, I'm down for Cary Fukunaga, James Bond. What do you guys think?
I hope he fights a sinister clown. played by Will Pontier.
Will Schmarsgaard.
No. Will. Yeah, by Schmel Schmarsgaard. No, do you know when he was going to direct It? It was going to be the kid from We're the Millers.
Oh, really? Will Poulter.
And Chicago. He was going to play the clown.
Really? I did not know
Yeah.
That.
And apparently he, like, was amazing.
Huh.
And then,
yeah, I mean, honestly, he kind of looks like a clown. Like, I can see it.
He does. But then Bill Skarsgård showed up, and he was like, hey, I can make both my eyes go in opposite directions. And they were like, Fukunaga, you're fired. Get out of here.
Take your clown and hit the road.
Anyway, so he's doing James Bond 25. It's coming out in February 2020, which seems like an odd time to release a James Bond movie, like in February. But still... I'm excited for it. Fukunaga's a really his visual style is really incredible. Just to look at like True Detective season 1, for example, of that, and I'm very excited to see what he can do with Bond. And then from there, we got some Star Wars news that we got to talk about. First off, is that Kathleen Kennedy, head of Lucasfilm, has extended her deal with Lucasfilm by 3 years. So I think it was supposed to expire in 2019, and now it's through like 2022, something like that. So I'm pretty happy about this. I think Kathleen Kennedy's been doing a pretty good job. Up to this point, I've liked more of Star Wars movies that have come out over the last 4 years than I have not liked. So, I don't know. How about you guys?
Yeah, I'm on board. Like, she's produced and been involved in, like, all of the best movies of my childhood and today.
Also that, yeah.
So, like, yeah, let's keep going, I guess.
Yeah.
I assume it'll be to finish, like, the main trilogy, like,
right.
Through episode
well,
9.
Well, she was already pretty much set through that because that's coming out at the end of 2019.
That's true, yeah.
But now
yeah,
she's.
I can't wait to see how they retcon everything they did in 8.
I don't think they will do that, and I hope they don't do that, but you never know. I feel like I'm worried that they kind of will. But I know, Vin, you're not the biggest fan of Star Wars Episode 8, which is why I don't understand why I let you on this podcast, but.
Well, it's because I respect it. It's because okay. I respect that they tried to do something different. But I don't like that. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't like the result, but I respect the attempt. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I much prefer... I mean, I like Force Awakens and I like Last Jedi. I like them both, but I much prefer Last Jedi to something like Force Awakens, which I felt was, you know, was a lot of fun, but also just felt like it was retreading a lot of the same ground that Star Wars has always treaded, where Last Jedi did try to break the mold and do something new. And I found that very exciting and...
I agree with you. I just think that it's weird to do that in the eighth film of a series. like Rogue One, awesome. Break it wide open. Do whatever you want. Like I would love if they did that with the Matrix movies. Like, did one-offs. I know that's out of left field completely, but that's something I think about a lot. I really like the Matrix, you guys. Have you seen it? Have you heard of this movie?
Tell us more about this Matrix you speak of.
Oh, man, it's numbers. Like, ones, zeros. You get it.
Yeah.
No, I think that Star Wars is something that had such deep roots in what it was that it was weird to take a left turn. But, like, I'd rather watch an interesting failure than a boring success.
Yeah, deep. I mean, fair enough. And that said, I think Kathleen Kennedy has been doing a really good job with Star Wars. There have been bumps in the road. I mean, there's, you know, your solos and stuff like that. But... you know, I'm excited for a couple more years of Kathleen Kennedy Star Wars, and I'm excited to see what direction the franchise kind of goes from here. It sounds like the franchise is going to be taking a bit of, not a break, but it sounds like they're going to be slowing down some of the movies they've been had in development, just because, like, you know, it's been a Star Wars movie every year for the past few years with, like, the spinoffs and stuff, and it sounds like after the kind of box office disappointment of Solo, I think even Disney's starting to feel like, okay, maybe we've, like, hit too hard on the Star Wars movies. Maybe we can go a year or two without a Star Wars movie coming out, and we can supplant Star Wars in other ways to satisfy fans, which is why there's a new Star Wars TV show coming out on that Disney streaming service. And we've talked about that show in the past when Jon Favreau was hired for it, but now we know a little bit more about it. It's going to be called The Mandalorian, and it's set between episodes 6 and 7. Now, the Mandalorians are the race of people that Boba and Jango Fett are. That's the kind of bounty hunter race. And I don't think this show follows either of them, just another Mandalorian.
God, I hope not.
The father-son drama.
It's just Boba carrying his father's head around.
Literally and metaphorically.
But anyway, so yeah, it seems like this will follow some new character that is also a Mandalorian, which means you can probably just have them in the Boba Fett armor and pretend they're Boba Fett, because that's basically... Like, it'll basically be the same. And it's going to have directors like Dave Filoni, who was the creator of Star Wars Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels. Takeo Waititi is directing the episode, which is pretty cool. Bryce Dallas Howard is directing an episode. Some interesting
right
names
on.
Coming out of that. Yeah. I'm pretty much down for this. Kind of like the Marvel Scarlet Witch Loki show. It's like it's a big property that Disney has access to. Might as well make a TV show out of it so they can sell that streaming service in 2019, you know?
And if they touch on that incest angle with the Fett family,
just Game of Thrones everything. Basically,
that I want. Vin, I feel like you have one specific thing you want to see in most TV shows.
Drama.
people learning how to talk.
Yeah. But yeah. Anyway, so that is the Star Wars news for today. And then finally, I got to talk about this big news that this just broke yesterday. Now we referred to James Gunn earlier. And how Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is currently on hold because he was fired by Disney. Still very unjust, in my opinion. That was absolutely ridiculous. But now, James Gunn is in talks to write and potentially direct Suicide Squad 2.
Starring Dave Bautista.
Possibly starring Dave Bautista, he says he wants in. And this is... I mean, this news kind of blew my mind yesterday. Because at first I was like, what the fuck is happening? And then I was like, this is DC's big fuck you move to Disney. I was like, well then... I mean, Suicide Squad, if you think about it, was like really trying to rip off Guardians of the Galaxy pretty hard. And its soundtrack choices, and it's like weird.
There's a record drop every 30 seconds in that movie.
Yeah. So now, and nobody liked Suicide Squad. So now it's like, well, we're trying to make a sequel to Suicide Squad, and the guy who made Guardians of the Galaxy is available now.
And he's angry.
It'll be dark like our movies.
So what do you guys think of this? Are you excited for a potential James Gunn Suicide Squad 2?
Excited is a very strong word.
In my case, a correct word.
I mean, I'm not like not excited about it. I just don't really care at this point. Like, this seems like one of those things that if you put an octopus with a bunch of balls with words on them and like have the octopus make a plot, like this is what it would come up with. We need a sequel to Suicide Squad, directed by James Gunn?
Oh, yeah, it's like a Mad Libs.
Yeah. Need a noun and two adjectives. Okay, whatever, man. Right. I'm sure it'll be, like, awesome. Like, I got no idea.
It can't be worse than the first one. Yeah. I refuse to believe that any movie is worse than the original Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I mean...
You have a man responsible for the death of his family complain, like... Like, sacrifice himself by saying he's not going to lose another family. But it's like, dude, one, you've known these people for an hour. And two, you killed your family. It's not like you couldn't save them. It's that you did it. You killed them.
Yeah.
And he's going to be back. He's in all the set photos. They're not even trying to hide that bullshit.
Well, there's no... I mean, the movie's not filming yet or anything. It's not... There's no set photos for Suicide Squad 2.
What?
He might... Huh? he might...
I feel like I saw in like meetings and stuff he was.
It's possible
the internet lied to me. That's what it's fake news.
It is possible. I mean, DC has like 25 projects in the works right now, so it's possible he's in like another movie because I know they're doing Birds of Prey and stuff like that. So it's possible, but
maybe he was just with the people, like
just hanging out.
Maybe he was just hanging out with like Will Smith, and they were like, "This proves it."
Yeah. Well, one thing I do think is interesting about this, and it seems like this is going to be the case. This might actually be like a soft reboot of Suicide Squad. So it might not feature most of that cast that was in the first movie. I'm guessing maybe Viola Davis will be back, and then maybe Will Smith. But Harley Quinn's going to be off doing Birds of Prey. They're making that movie instead. So I'm thinking, like, James Gunn will kind of have his pick of characters that he wants to work with, and just kind of pick and choose and do his own thing. Like, cast Batista as Bane or something and just go.
Presumably,
nuts.
There will be a raccoon and a tree.
Oh my god!
You think he's going to take his
woman?
He's going to take his Guardians of the Galaxy 3 script and just change all the names to like
just find and replace the name.
Yeah. Like,
Control F, yep. Star Lord, Deadshot.
I'm in. I'm so in for that. Actually,
it's like a Deadshot.
It's like a space opera. it's just the Suicide Squad.
But in all seriousness, though, I think James Gunn could pull off a great Suicide Squad movie, especially if he's able to like tap into like that meaner streak from earlier in his career, where he made movies like Slither and Super. You know,
maybe not the whole mean streak.
Well, not like the weird Twitter jokes, but I'm talking about the movies he made. You know, Slither and Super are both awesome movies that are really cynical and dark. And Suicide Squad 2 could like easily tap into that. I feel like he lost that side of him when he was making those Guardians movies because they were the more like family friendly Disney things. I think it depends on what happens with this, because again, DC has like 25 movies in the works right now. Who knows if this actually happens? Who knows if this might even be a negotiation tactic to get Disney to hire James Gunn back, you know?
Ooh, interesting.
That could be a thing. Like this, they might like leak, like James Gunn might like leak this to the press or something, and maybe like Disney sees that and is like, shit, like one of our biggest hit makers, this guy who turned this obscure comic that nobody had heard of into a massive iconic success, might be going over to our direct competitor. Like we might have put a stop to this and hire him back. Who knows? That could be a thing.
But do you think Marvel really gives a fuck about DC movies anymore? Like, after everything that's happened?
No, I mean, I agree with you. But, like, they are seen as, you know, Marvel's direct competitors.
Absolutely.
You know, James Gunn could potentially turn Suicide Squad 2 into a massive hit, you know, if you make
this
kind
of
awesome.
Does give a little. It's like when a football player gets, like, fired from a team and gets picked up by their rival team and, like, has the playbook from the team he just left.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a real thing.
I agree. And I do think it's interesting that DC's strategy seems to be to, like, when they're making their equivalent of a Marvel movie, to hire the guy who made that Marvel movie. Because, like, now so far they've had Joss Whedon come on Justice League after he made the Avengers.
Which worked out so well.
And now they've got James Gunn potentially doing Suicide Squad too. I just think it's kind of an interesting strategy. We'll see how it works out for
Suicide Squad 2, Guardians of the Suicide Squad, Volume 2.
Anyway, so that is the big James Gunn Suicide Squad 2 news. We will see what happens with that. Curious, like, DC's got a lot of actually really interesting projects over the next couple of years. I mean, just next year, they've got three movies coming out with Shazam, Wonder Woman 2, and The Joker. And all of those seem kind of interesting to me. We'll see what happens.
Are you guys up on the Joker controversy?
No, what's the Joker controversy? What?
Allegedly, the other day on set, a bunch of extras were trapped in a subway car for a scene.
I actually did hear about that, yeah.
And they were supposed to get a break after, like, 2 hours, which is SAG, like that's what SAG requires. Yeah. And they did not let them out of the subway car, and apparently, like, extras were banging on the doors trying to get out, and some of them had to, like, piss in the subway car.
Man, it's like the Joker
allegedly
himself organized this.
It's like still less messed up than anything Jared Leto did on set.
Yes, definitely.
Fair.
Anyway, so I think that about wraps up our film news segment. Let's move on into our discussions.
Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're going to talk about movies for our discussions.
All right, it's time for our discussions here on Film Bookcast. Vin, since you're the guest, why don't you go first?
I just finished Big Mouth Season 2. Oh, man, it is so good. that show is crazy in the way it pushes every button.
Hey, my turn.
All right, our fabulous hostess. Come on down.
Thank you, Daniel. Okay.
Oh, you making out with somebody.
Kissing someone.
You're kissing.
Ooh, Barack Obama.
And you're pushing someone's...
Coach Steve eating a sandwich.
You're praying?
You're praying to Mecca. You're a Muslim.
Barack Hussein Obama.
Someone kissing another person.
Oh, he's a party wolf.
Daniel. You're doing Daniel.
Wait, what? That's not me.
Actually, that is so you.
How is that Daniel?
He's a head pusher.
He's a head pusher.
He did a head push.
Head push? What is a head push?
It's when a man pushes a woman's head to try to get a blowjob.
Wait, that's a move?
Not a fan of the head push.
All my life I've been waiting for them to go down there. I didn't know you could do a push.
You can't push.
No push. I'm not pushing, baby.
Nick, I need to borrow your car.
But at the end of the day, it's a really poignant, really sweet story about kids growing up, and it's very relatable, kind of at every turn.
Yeah, I was a big fan of season one. I have not watched season two yet. That just came out, I think, on Friday.
Yeah, I finished it probably Friday.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Coach Steve has a much bigger role this season.
Oh, really?
And it's so good. It's so good. You get to meet the... Have you seen any of the trailers? I don't want to spoil anything.
I haven't really, no.
Oh, then you get to see these kids go through life. And it is... It is heartbreaking and hilarious. Big Mouth Season 2, hire me for Season 3. Hashtag hire Vin for Season 3. Of Big Mouth. Hashtag yeah. Guardians of the Big Mouth Volume 3.
Yeah, we're going to get both those hashtags trending. What else you got, Vin?
I've been watching a lot of horror movies. I've been trying to up my game.
It is October.
For like it's Halloween season. Coming up. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but every October...
Oh, All Hallows Eve you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the ancient tradition that Derek's carried over, we just started doing again. So I kind of been, like, browsing Netflix, and there's these incredible, like, there's this incredible kind of sleeper pick movie called The Houses That October Built.
Tell me about yourself, and what are we doing?
You want my name? My name is Zach. You've known me for 20 years, Mikey. I rented an RV. I want to find the most extreme haunted house in the world.
What is an extreme haunt? I don't understand how far, like how far they, you really can go on without hurting somebody.
Okay.
And it started off as these group of college kids making a documentary as like their senior project about how haunted houses will hire anybody like without a background check. And then they finished the doc, but then they were like, this could make an interesting feature also. So they made a feature to go along with the documentary. Both of them are called The Houses That October Built. And the first one, I guess, was successful enough to garner a sequel.
Okay.
And it's got a much higher budget, but it's not that good. cool. But it's just like a fun little like horror movie.
Nice. Anything else? Cool.
No, that's it.
Cool beans. I just wanted to make sure. But
no, for sure. I got a lot of thoughts on Venom I'm holding in.
All right. Yeah, fair enough. You don't want to lose any of those Venom thoughts. Mike, what do you got? What are your discussions for today?
I have a few things. The first two, in the spirit of Vin, I don't know what I was going to say.
knock, let the Vin in. Vin.
Yes.
The reason I actually brought Vin on this podcast was so that we can call the movie Venom.
Nice. That's the name of the episode.
What if I just hung up when you said that?
But anyway... I wanted to watch some weird movies. It's October, right? It's spooky season. So the first one up, not quite a horror movie, although definitely is horrifying in a mind-bending way, and that is The Holy Mountain by Alejandro Jodorowsky.
Yes.
Jodorowsky. And this is available on Filmstruck. That's where I watched it. And this is a movie I had heard about. I am vaguely, you know, culturally aware of Jodorowsky and, like, his just experimental filmmaking and stuff, but I had never seen anything by him, and I wanted to watch this movie, and I wasn't aware that it's basically a silent art piece, like a silent film art piece.
Huh.
Yeah.
Have either of you guys seen it?
I have not. I've meant to watch it for a long time, though, and now that I have, now we're sharing a Filmstruck account now,
Yes, so now we're dealing in passwords like Vin.
I have access to it, so I will probably watch it soon.
What? Yeah. That's so cool that all three of us are sharing that account.
Yeah, and it's wild. Like, it's one of those things where you just sit down and experience it, and it's really cool. Check it out. It's some magnificent, you know, camera work and all the cinematography stuff, and Jodorowsky is just like a straight up artist, and it's all allegory. It's wild. And then the other movie that I watched is called, or one of the other movies I watched is called The Devils, and this is directed by Ken Russell.
Right.
And this is a movie I had actually seen the trailer for with you, Mike, at, I believe, one of the Draft House things we went to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they said they were playing it, and I was like, this looks bizarre. And it's on Filmstruck. It recently got added.
Yeah.
And this is a historical drama set in, like, the 1600s in France about a town with, like, accused of witchcraft and a nunnery and a priest that's just, like, really profane, and it's, like... apparently been banned. It's one of those, like, you know, video nasty kind of movies.
And it's directed by James Gunn. Yeah.
Like, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if... and it's just crazy and, like, very satirical and just, you know, calling out, you know, witch hunts and, like, you know, a hot take to have that witch hunts are bad.
It's called The Devils?
The Devils, yeah. I think it's 1971.
Okay.
So it's one of those, like, film history kind of movies where it had a huge negative response, campaigns, it was banned in a couple countries and stuff, and it's crazy. You know, it's, cool. Like, very over the top, and, like, I can't remember the main actor's name off
It's a Vanessa
head.
Redgrave picture.
Yes.
Oh.
Who could forget?
if I had Mike to take apparently. A guess.
Yeah.
At who was
but,
in
like,
it.
It's like the main character standing in a cathedral, like, just shouting, like, at bleachers full of extras. Like, it's just wild, you know. It's just like really extreme camera angles. It's a lot of fun and bizarre. And then the movie that I really wanted to talk about is called Sleepaway Camp.
Welcome to Sleepaway Camp. Someone is watching you.
Hey, Baba, Reba.
Someone is waiting for you. Someone wants to scare you to death.
Turn it! Turn the wheel!
Oh my God!
Sleepaway Camp. You won't be coming home.
Okay.
I wrote it down, but I forgot it. Or it's on my phone, and my phone's locked right now, so that's too much effort.
Okay, fair enough.
Robert
Hiltzik, that's the one.
Man. Again, just a guess.
Yeah, just name out of a hat. And this is a 80s, early 80s slasher movie, and this is available on Shudder. I assumed that it was going to be a, like, Friday the 13th knockoff, right? Like, it's called
Sleepaway Camp. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is very different. It's pretty wild. It's about these teenagers go to, like, the young teenagers that are attending the sleepaway camp, and, like, murders start happening around them. And, like, it's the main characters, like, counselors are dying, but the main characters are the kids. So it's, like, a really weird perspective on it instead of the counselors being the main characters. But it also has one of the craziest twist endings and also one of the most problematic twist endings. So, like, be warned. definitely recommend it, though. Like, and it's also – it has that, like, early 80s horror comedy, like, spoof sort of thing. Like, it sort of reminds – parts of it reminded me of Wet Hot American Summer.
You've piqued my interest, sir.
Yeah. Where, like, they're making fun of camps. Like, just, like, you know, there's the guy that is the athletics director who has just, like, the biggest bulge. Like, his pants, his shorts barely make it past what they're concealing, and it's everything's still there. Like,
his dick could pick up a dumbbell and do a curl.
Yeah, and he's, like, he Captain Morgan poses on a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean?
Me too.
Just all the time.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's a lot of fun for what it, you know, for its slasher goodness. Just be warned, there's some weird stuff that happens like, the last minute. Like,
really?
It's, like, all happening, and then this thing is revealed, and then it's the
credits. Oh, they don't even give you like time to sit with it in the film.
No, like it happened, but it freeze frames on the thing, and then
love
the
a tableau.
Scroll. Yeah, it's wild,
beautiful.
And then the other thing, this is mostly for Mike. I watched season 2 of The Good Place. It's available on Netflix.
Thank you so much for watching this, Mike.
Hey, robot slave lady. Busty Alexa. Oh, Janet.
Hey there.
Still not used to it. Hey, what if I, an already amazing person who definitely belongs here, wanted to learn even more about how to be a good person? Is one of these nerds like a teacher or a life coach or an Instagram fitness model or something?
Eleanor, I'd like you to meet Chidi Anagonye. Chidi, this is Eleanor.
Janet tells me you were a professor of some kind?
Yes, I was a professor of ethics and moral philosophy, focusing on deontology.
Hang on one second, Chidi. This guy's too big of a nerd. Who else you got?
You Shanghai'd me into watching the first season.
I did.
You were like, come over to my house, we'll do this other thing. We're going to watch Good
That is one. Forkin' despicable.
Yeah. What a bench. And it's wonderful. It picks up right where season one left off. It has all of the great cliffhangers at every episode, at the end of every episode. And it's just like, it's just good. Like, it's just like wholesome, and like these people all love each other, and we just really need that in the world right now, I think.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it's just watch it.
Yeah, it's a great show. Season 3 just started like 2 weeks ago, and it's still fantastic. So catch up on that when you can, Mike. It's available. I'm pretty sure it's on Hulu. If you have Hulu, I don't know if you do. But
The Devil's streaming service.
No, The Devil's streaming service was Filmstruck because they're showing the
Devil's. That's where The Devil's is. You're right.
Yeah, literally and figuratively.
Anyway, all right. So I think that wraps up your discussions, Mike, unless you got any more.
Yeah. No,
all
that's
right.
It.
Cool. All right. So I got a few movies I wanted to talk about that all came out this year. And the first one is one that you've also watched, Mike, and it's one that we'll cover eventually. We're going to turn this into an episode of The Cleat Works for a minute.
Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker!
That's cool. So here we go. Hello, welcome to The Cleat Works. My name is Mike Smith. This is Mike's Cree Show. Fellow Cageaholic, all that stuff. Yeah, this is the new Nicolas Cage movie that's directed by Panos Cosmatos, the director of Beyond the Black Rainbow. I saw this in a theater, and I was very lucky to be able to do so. You know, I'm here in Montana now, and it doesn't really... This movie isn't playing in a lot of theaters in Montana. But what happened
probably
was...
the only one.
Yeah, pretty much. The theater, which is right next to my house, the Roxy, is the indie theater in Missoula, Montana. And I've been going there a lot recently, because it's right next to my house. And anyway, the Montana Film Festival was this past weekend. So it was like 3 days of like films going on and stuff. And the centerpiece of the festival was that they were doing a free screening of Mandy. And I knew I had to go. Like, there was no way I wasn't going to go see Mandy for
this
free.
About, you were talking about this before. This is that girl Mandy Larian, right? So, I am so sorry.
Get so sorry, man.
I've been sitting on that one since before.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for that.
Anyway... and the environment of this was fantastic. I mean, it was like a whole like film festival crowd. I had reserved my tickets like weeks ahead of time, but it was completely sold out. There was a sign there that said, you know, if you're trying to get tickets for Mandy tonight, you will not be able to, but we will bring back Mandy due to popular demand and that kind of thing. And they actually are bringing back Mandy for a week next week, I think. But anyway, I got there and like it was like a party there. I mean, there was like pizza. There was somebody brought a beach ball like before the actual movie started. It was nuts. And the intro before the movie and stuff, and it was actually paired with a short film, which was called Great Choice, which was also hilarious. If you can find that online, I don't know if it's available, but it's about a woman who's like stuck in this infinite loop of Red Lobster commercials, and she starts to realize it. And it's pretty amazing. Anyway, so that was paired up with Mandy, and this movie is just gorgeous. I mean, Mike, you can back me up on this, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's truly like a lot like the Holy Mountain. It's something you just sit and experience.
Yes, and I was so glad to be able to see it in the theater. I mean, I actually already pre-ordered the Blu-ray because I wasn't sure if I'd be able to see it in the theater. But then I did, and I might actually go again when it's here next week because I was like that enthralled by it. I mean, this is, I think, in many ways the ultimate Nicolas Cage movie. Like it's just in terms of like. You get every aspect of Cage in this performance that he's giving. And he's incredible. Andrea Riseborough as Mandy is also incredible in this movie. And just the just looking at it is a sight to behold. So Mandy's amazing, and I believe that wraps up this mini episode of Complete Works. We'll talk about this movie a lot more further down the line when we get to it in the other podcast. And that is Mandy. I got a few more I wanted to get through. I also saw The House with a Clock in its Walls.
Aw, how wholesome.
Yeah. Now, this is the new kind of kids horror movie directed by Eli Roth, which is weird.
What?
So there's no cannibalism, there's no...
Yeah, no, there's no bodies hanging from ceilings and...
Wow.
Yeah, Vin, it sounds like you did not know that Eli Roth made this movie.
I somehow that slipped like under the radar for me. I'm not gonna lie. I was really looking forward to seeing this movie, not because I thought it'd be good, just because I love Jack Black in this type of movie. Yes.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I saw the trailers for this, and I was like, "This cool. This movie could be kind of fun." Jack Black's in it. Cate Blanchett. Kyle MacLachlan plays the villain. And so I was pretty excited about that. And it's weird because there's actually some weird parallels with his Twin Peaks arc going on in this movie. And, you know, I think I really would have loved this movie when I was 10 years old. But the reason I actually saw this movie, because it was playing in IMAX. And when they were showing it in IMAX, they paired it with a showing of Thriller in 3D beforehand. The 14-minute Thriller music video from the 80s directed by
John
Landis.
Of course you do that. Yeah, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I don't know why these two things were paired up, but I'm so happy they were, because, like, Thriller 3D was amazing, guys. It was so much better than The House of the Clock in its Walls.
Did they play it, like, after The House of the Clock in its Walls, so people had to stay?
No, it was before. It was before.
They would have been smarter to do it the other way, but a lot of people walked out.
It's possible. But yeah, anyway, Thriller 3D, amazing experience if you get the chance. It's pretty awesome. And I got to watch it on an IMAX screen, which is even cooler.
Nice.
And then I wanted to talk about another movie that, Mike, you actually talked about a few months back called Revenge. Yeah, and you talked about this a while ago. This movie's great. You know, it's about a woman who gets raped and then gets revenge on the three guys who did it. And, you know, Carly Fargeau is the director of this movie. I believe it's her first time directing a film. Knocks it out of the park. And Matilda Lutz, as the lead woman, is just incredible in this movie. The violence is super brutal, but it's also very economical, and it's so gorgeously shot. You know, there's bits of it where it reminds me of, like, the way the character behaves in the beginning. Somebody described her as, like, Lolita, but in a Michael Bay movie. And that's like,
holy shit.
And that's like, it's a pretty apt description, and like, yeah, the way the movie goes, it's pretty great. And it's just a great example of like the exploitation genre at its peak. So Revenge, really worth checking out if you haven't seen. It's like partially in French, partially in English. But it's really great. And then I saw another movie that came out, and this one I feel like I got totally slept on. But I went to go see it on a whim because I knew one critic that I follow, Bob Chipman, who fucking loved it and was talking about it a lot. And, you know, I saw this movie had come out, and it, you know, completely flopped at the box office. I ended up seeing it on, like, the last night it was playing near here. It's called Assassination Nation.
My name is Lily Coulson, and I'm 18 years old. These are my three best friends, Em, Bex, and Sarah.
And this is the 100% true story of how my town, Salem, lost its motherfucking mind.
Oh, yeah. Isn't Bella Thorne in that?
I believe she is. Yeah, she's in this.
Oh, thank God.
Joel McHale's also in this, and a bunch of pretty good actors are in this, actually. And this movie's awesome. It's so good.
Wow.
This is a Spring Breakers meets The Purge, is basically how how I was thinking about it when it came out. But it also emits like this backdrop of righteous indignity. I really think this is going to be like a cult classic in a few years' time. But it's about a group of girls living in this town where suddenly...
Sold.
suddenly what happens is like this hacker starts getting into everybody's information and starts doxing people around the town. And then eventually about half of the town just gets all their private shit leaked out on the internet. And so everybody's like deepest, darkest secrets are revealed basically. And it kind of becomes The Purge in
wow.
trying to find this guy. And it's awesome. It's so good. It didn't even get like that great reviews. It has like a 66 in Rotten Tomatoes or something like that. But this is like one of my favorite movies of the year, I think, right now. So check out Assassination Nation if you can. It's probably not playing anywhere near you anymore, but once it hits Blu-ray or streaming, like, get on that because it is so good.
For sure.
And then finally, I got one more. It's the other movie that came out this weekend, which does not feature the character of Venom. So like, why did I even bother going to see this? I don't know.
Did they let the devil in?
You know what?
I don't understand.
This, You know what? The songwriting in this movie is actually quite different than the songwriting in Venom.
That's a flawless transition. I just remembered what this is.
A Star Is Born is the movie. Is the movie that I went to go see. Maybe it's time to let the old ways down. Maybe it's time to let the old ways down. Takes a lot to change, man. Hell, it takes a lot to try.
You know, man, in the old days, I always knew, like, you were going to do something, that you'd be all right. It's the first time I'm worried about you.
And this movie is going to win Best Picture at the Oscars. Like, it's going to happen.
Whoa.
Yeah?
It's going to happen. And it's pretty good. I enjoyed it. Like, the songs are good. Lady Gaga is good. Bradley Cooper didn't exactly work for me performance-wise, but I think he does a good job directing it. And it's got, like, a very cool, like, music scene backdrop. It's got some cameos in there. Halsey's in the movie. Actually, Bradley Cooper's backing band in the movie is Lucas Nelson and the Promise of the Real.
Yo, what? I love those guys.
Yeah, I've seen them live a couple times, and so I was pretty excited to see them, so that was pretty cool. And yeah, the movie's, like, solid. I think this is the fourth time A Star Is Born has been made into a movie, and it pretty much hits all the beats that you would expect A Star Is Born to hit. It's the same story. I think Lady Gaga brings a lot to the role, but at the same time, I feel like it's really focused on, like, Bradley Cooper's character, and he's not the more interesting character, like... There's that, and it never. I think there's like it's like a half hour in when Lady Gaga like takes the stage for the first time, and that's an incredible moment. And I think after that, it like never lives up to that moment. But I did enjoy the movie. Sam Elliott is great in the movie, by the way. Sam Elliott's in it, first of all.
Nice.
And he's amazing. Dave Chappelle's also in this, and he's very good.
Right. I'm so happy he's in a movie.
Right. And yeah, I liked it. Again, there's so much going for this movie in terms of its Oscar race. What it's going to be doing there. Like, I feel like it's going to be this year's La La Land. Except I love La La Land, and this movie, I'm just like, yeah, it's pretty good.
Have you seen The Monuments Men?
I actually have not. I meant to go see that when it came out, and then I heard it was terrible, and I never did.
Yeah, that's fair. The point, I guess, that I want to bring. This is actually one of the rare times I want to make a serious point.
Sure.
That movie, I was watching it, and I was just like, George Clooney directed it, and I just remember being like, it was so Hollywood. And I like somebody asked me to explain what I meant by that, and I didn't really know how at the time, but it just like it was like everything you expected, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like if you were like, picture old school Hollywood, and then it directed a movie.
Yeah, I mean,
does this movie fall victim to that?
Well, that's kind of George Clooney's whole thing, I will say. Like, he's a very old Hollywood kind of actor. I will say that A Star Is Born is a remake of a movie from old Hollywood, so you can you could kind of gather that from it.
I don't follow. No, I'm kidding.
Because, I mean, the first one came out in 1937, I think.
Have you seen any of the other ones, either of you?
I have seen bits of the one from the 50s, but I've not actually watched through any of the other three. But I knew kind of the beats of the movie before I had seen this. But yeah, no, it's good. And I think like as an update of this story for like a new generation, I think it's good. I like the movie. I'm going to hate it by the time it wins Best Picture because people will not stop talking about it for 5 months. But like, I liked it.
Yeah.
It's going to win Best Original Song. It's going to win.
Oh, yeah. It's going to win Best Original Song, hands down. The Shallow is already... Like, I feel like it's already locked in that...
Already. Yep.
I mean,
they should make a movie about space, about, like, a literal star being, like, brought into existence and call that A Star Is Born and release it, like, this weekend.
Yes, they absolutely should do that.
And let James Gunn direct it. Full circle. Yeah. All right. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah. The Shallow will probably win Best Original Song as well, unless it loses to Eminem's Venom song, which obviously is it's the one that I would pick. Speaking of, we got to start getting into our featured review of Venom.
I'm Eddie Brock. I'm a reporter. I always seem to find myself questioning something the government may not be looking at. I found something really bad. And I have been...
Who said that?
Taken. Look around at the world. What do you see? A planet on the brink of collapse. Human beings are disposable. Like man
and symbiote combined. This is a new race, a new species. A higher life form.
What do you want from me?
You'll find out.
I'm so sorry.
We cannot just hurt people.
Look into my eyes, Eddie. The way I see it. We can do whatever we want. Do we have a deal?
All right, that was from the trailer for Venom, the new movie written by Jeff Pinker, Scott Rosenberg, and Kelly Marcel, and directed by Ruben Fleischer. It stars Tom Hardy, Michelle Williams, Riz Ahmed, Scott Hayes, Reed Scott, Jenny Slate, and Melora Walters, among others. And the IMDb plot synopsis for Venom reads, when Eddie Brock acquires the powers of a symbiote, he will have to release his alter ego, Venom, to save his life. Now, guys, Venom is a movie that I never thought would ever exist. Because here's the thing, they've been talking about this movie for a very long time. They've been trying to make a solo Venom movie since around the time Spider-Man 3 came out, since the character first appeared there. And if you listen to our podcast from last year, where we report about the development of Venom, every time we talk about it, I'm like, yeah, there's no way this happens. Like, Sony's, like, bluffing.
Yeah.
You know, every time. I was like, Sony's bluffing.
We're like, Mike, they dropped the first trailer. You were like, nah, I don't think it's gonna...
It ain't happening. It ain't happening. And then
Mike, Venom's coming out this weekend. Nah, I don't think it is.
I don't believe it. Even when I was watching the movie, I was like, am I really watching a Venom movie? Which, to be fair, he doesn't show up until like an hour into the movie. So.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know what's interesting is that the other people who didn't believe a Venom movie was going to be made was the writers, clearly. Because you could tell the whole time they were like, yeah, yeah, we have the script ready. Yeah, no, we've been working on it. Oh, my God, it's due tomorrow? What? We got to get anything down.
Did you open that file yet?
Yeah.
Start it.
Okay.
Do we figure out who Venom is? Can we get Eminem?
Okay. Oh. Well, anyway, the joke's on me because Venom is definitely a movie that exists. And for me, that's about all I can say about it. Guys, what do you think of Venom?
There were moving images on a screen. There was also sound.
Yeah, well, why don't we start with the guy who I think probably enjoyed it the most, and that is Vin. Vin, what did you think of Venom?
All right. Quick disclaimer. I think from a technical standpoint, this was not a very good movie. Like, the writing is nonsensical.
Yeah.
And some of the acting is not to the level I would like it. There was zero chemistry between the romantic leads. Granted, they were an ex-couple. Spoiler alerts. But all that being said, I think that Tom Hardy turns in a performance in this movie equatable to Johnny Depp as Jack Sparrow in 2004, where people are looking at it now and they're like, is he a genius or is this like just the most garbage thing ever? And I think that it's genius.
Fair.
I think he is giving it just this fun. I think he had the most fun making this movie.
I believe that you are right. And you know what? Johnny Depp got an Oscar nomination for that first Pirates movie. And I think we can only give Tom Hardy the same for Venom.
And again, they were like, all right, so Venom, clearly a character who has his face covered most of the time. Let's get Tom Hardy, obviously.
Yep. I mean,
who do we hate to see on the screen but love to hear doing a fake voice?
Tom Hardy?
Yeah.
He is known for covering up his face a lot in movies. I mean, Dark Knight Rises, Mad Max Fury Road, Dunkirk. Like, he spends most of those movies wearing, like, a weird mask.
Yeah.
So, yeah, makes sense. You know, I get it.
Also, I just thought the visuals of the symbiotes were really cool.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. So it seems like you were kind of pro on Venom, even though you recognize that the movie is pretty bad.
Yeah, it's the same way I feel about most movies that I see, where I'm like, oh, man, I loved that, but that was not the best.
Now, Mike, what was your take on Venom? Because I know you were not looking forward to this movie at all.
Yeah, well, yeah, I had basically no expectations going in. Not that, you know, I never typically ever want a movie. Like, I don't ever actively root against a movie.
Sure.
But so I go into movies, you know, unsullied a lot, just totally blind. I had seen the trailer for this. That said, basically, this was a thing that I sat through for a while. I didn't hate it. Like, I'm sort of ambivalent, really. It's fun on a certain level. Like, some of the action is cool. Like, you know, I enjoyed Tom Hardy's performance art.
Right.
And I love... well, actually, I'll say that for spoilers, I guess. But okay. You told me a certain story on set about one scene and a certain... prop, which was funny.
What? I do not know this. I'm excited to...
Yeah, we'll save it.
Yeah, we'll save that for spoilers.
But yeah, I mean, like, it's just hot garbage. It's like Hot Topic. It's Hot Topic incarnate for 2 hours.
But it's like if the garbage that was being burned all smelled really good.
I mean, sure.
It was a tolerable garbage. Like, it was
there
all...
was, like, some spice in there once and, like, it was, like, incense.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's just goofy. Like, it's just the goofiest, like, everything is just, like, what's the most studio-safe, silly version of this we can do? It rips off a bunch of shit from other movies that came out this year, I feel like.
Yeah.
That's just how I felt. It was like, okay, sure. Like, yeah, I watched this movie for 2 hours, or however long it is.
Fair enough, yeah. I mean, I will say, I think, you know, Venom is a movie that got pretty trashed by critics. It has a 30 on Rotten Tomatoes, I think, right now. And it seems like a lot of the critics are treating it as if it's like a The Room level disaster, you know, where it's like an unintentional comedy and that kind of thing. And I think there is a little bit of that, but also I feel like for me, a lot of the comedy beats read as intentional. Like, it seemed like, you know, it was trying to be funny or trying to be goofy. I will say I did not outright dislike Venom, but that doesn't mean I liked it. You know, on our last episode of Complete Works, we talked about Ghost Rider 2, right?
Yes.
And I would say that I enjoyed Venom on the level that I enjoy the Ghost Rider movies, which is that I am aware that there is a lot of not good stuff here. And I can point to a lot of things that I think are very dumb. But it's anchored by this terrific lead performance from Tom Hardy, who commits to the role so much that it, like, almost wins me over. Like, just barely. you know, and not quite. It doesn't, like, quite win me over. Like, I still have a lot of issues with Venom. But I'm, like, able to just kind of sit down and enjoy it on a level of, like, I enjoy comic books. And so, if this is a comic book character, I might as well watch this, you know?
Yeah. I feel like there were two routes that would have won me over. They could have either gone, oh man, I don't know if this is, it's not spoilers, because we know Eddie Brock as a character, as a reporter, right?
Yeah.
I would have either wanted, like, just go hard investigative, like, journalism thriller, like, that, like, also has this weird, like,
symbiote
alien
subplot. Yeah.
Or full Cronenberg. And we don't really toe either of those lines. We sort of, like, waffle between those things. And I was kind of like, you pick one. Pick a lane and do it better, because you're doing both.
It is very safe. And that's a very astute, like, description about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think my main issue with it feels like it's a superhero movie from, like, another era. Like, it's an era where studios, like, hadn't really figured out what makes superhero movies work. So it's like, you know, movies like Ghost Rider and Daredevil and Hulk and X-Men 3 were all coming out. You know, like, the elements were all there. And to, like, a degree, I kind of like all those movies. So I think, like, your enjoyment of Venom is just sort of dependent on how tolerant you are of, like, bullshit that gets in the way of the fun Venom action, you know?
This is also the closest to, the F word has ever been to the MCU.
I guess since this movie is, like, ancillary to the MCU.
Yeah, because, like, you know, they had it in the X-Men ones, but that's Fox. They don't, that's not the MCU. Sure.
Yeah, right. Well, it will be soon, but...
This was originally an R rating, right? Or was going to be an R rating?
I believe the plan originally was to film this for an R rating, and then they kind of backed
out. It should have been.
Yeah, like,
no,
we've got Deadpool already. Like, just do it.
Yeah, no, there's no reason why this couldn't have been R rating. I think it would have been a lot better if they could have let loose a little bit more with that R rating. But I think one of my big issues with it is that, first of all, this movie is less than 2 hours long, shorter than a lot of comic book movies, but it feels a lot longer to me. And I think the reason is because it's got a really long first act, and then it rushes through its second and third acts like it was nothing.
Yeah.
You know? Like, Venom doesn't show up until, like, an hour into the movie, and that first hour is, like, pretty rough to me.
Why,
like,
do they keep doing that? Like, I don't understand. Every time, every Spider-Man movie, like, the first establishing movie, the first hour is them not as the thing everybody wants to see.
No, but even I would disagree with at least Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, because that, like, he's Spider-Man within like 20 to 30 minutes. Or at
right
least
on.
He's
right
got
on.
His, he's got his powers at least early on. This one's like a full hour, and it should have been like 30 minutes max before like Tom Hardy and Venom were like fused together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to go through. I had a not that great experience in my theater. The only showing I was able to see, you know, that worked out time wise was in 3D. So I had to pay even more money to watch this.
Man, but gotta get on the AMC Stubbs A list, bro.
A
list.
But the 3D didn't even work was the problem. Like, we had to get up, a bunch of people had to get up and complain, and they eventually fixed it. But it was about like 10-15 minutes into the movie by the time the 3D kicked in. And when they, like, switched it over or whatever they had to do, it, like, the movie, like, paused for a few seconds while it switched to 3D. And somebody yelled out, "Start it over." And they, and they did, which is nice. So at least I got to see the whole movie in the 3D, you know, the $18 I paid for.
Yeah.
But it was 15 minutes longer. I had to watch that part again.
You got to see more of that hot romance between Tom Hardy and Michelle Williams.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Ooh, so steamy.
It's like watching two cinder blocks kind of be pushed into each other.
Yeah.
That's about as much chemistry as they had.
Yep. I agree with you there. And that's the thing. I feel like, yeah, I think we're in agreement that Tom Hardy is very good in the movie, right? That's like, I mean, he's going bonkers. He's going nuts. He's given like a Nicolas Cage on
it's,
performance.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
Without him, this movie doesn't work. I will say that flat out.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think if you put anybody else in that lead role, I'm not into it.
Yeah, unless it's Nicolas Cage, of course. But everybody who is not Tom Hardy in this movie, I think, feels very perfunctory. And some of them are given, like, I think, career worst performances. I mean, we've mentioned, like, Michelle Williams has, like, no chemistry with Tom Hardy. I think, ultimately, she's fine in the movie. But, like, Riz Ahmed, who is, like, incredible in The Night Of. He was really solid in Rogue One. Great foil in Nightcrawler. He's, like, barely present in this movie in his role as evil Elon Musk.
Yeah. So just Elon Musk.
Yeah,
Elon Musk. And exactly. I will see myself out.
And then there's like Jenny Slate is in this movie. And she's like so great in other things, right? She's a great comedic actress. And she's done drama pretty well in the past. But like I don't buy Jenny Slate as a scientist. Like you put like a lab coat and a pair of glasses on her. And like,
who's that smart woman?
And like you compare that to like I don't know like Olivia Munn in The Predator, right? And I feel like she sold the idea of like being like a lab technician and stuff like that a lot better.
She did.
than Jenny Slate does in this movie. And you know,
but also she's like spoilers. No. I'll wait.
Okay, you know, this movie's also directed by Ruben Fleischer, and this is a guy who made one really great movie at the start of his career with Zombieland. He directed Zombieland. And then ever since, he has spent, like, the past decade just, like, failing to live up to that potential, at least for me. I mean...
he's pulling a Blomkamp.
He's pulling a Blomkamp, you know? You know, I think, you know...
Venom, they hate to see it happen.
Yeah. And I'm glad he got this gig. Like, it's good for him, I guess. But, you know, I think Venom is better than Gangster Squad, at least. Like, I fucking hated Gangster Squad. But, you know, I really think Fleischer is only as good as the script that he's working with. And like Vin was saying, this script seemed like it was shat out in a day, you know?
The script is like a turd in the wind.
That's a line that made it into the movie.
Yeah, that is a line that made it into
you know
the
what's
movie.
Bad? You knew this was going to be bad when a pre-visual effects shot made it into the first trailer.
Yeah, I mean, that was like when Green Lantern was coming out. Like, I remember being pretty excited about Green Lantern. Until that first trailer hit. Because when that first trailer hit, like, the visual effects were clearly not done. It looked like garbage. And they didn't end up looking that much better in the actual movie anyway. But, like...
At least this movie did, like, that. You know what I mean? Like, over Green Lantern. Yeah. Like, the visual effects were pretty good.
Oh, yeah. No, I actually do think... I agree with you. The symbiotes look cool. I think Venom himself looks very cool in the movie. And I didn't think that when I was watching the trailers. But when I saw him in the movie, I was like, yeah, that looks like Venom. And I think... You know, to its credit, it does do the character of Venom well, I think. You know, I think it does it better than in Spider-Man 3, even though I don't think this movie is as good as Spider-Man 3.
That's the hottest take I've ever heard in my life.
Well, I do hold Spider-Man 3 in a much higher esteem than I think most people do. For example, I also think Spider-Man 3 is better than Spider-Man Homecoming. But that's
and Mike and I hung up in unison.
We start our own podcast.
It's
called the Book Film Cast.
But when Venom does finally show up in the movie, like, he's great. I'm a big fan of him. You know, Hardy does a great job with both roles. I think the action scenes are pretty fun. Venom is surprisingly funny and, like, weird. And it's, like, still nonsense, and it's never explored as fully as it should be. But, like, I think the movie finally finds something it can latch onto when Venom finally shows up.
Oh, for sure. I think the relationship, the movie's greatest strength is the relationship between Eddie and Venom. Not, yes. I don't like their logic behind it, because as you... I don't know. Is this a spoiler? Like, when you find out what Venom's deal is?
Keep it safe for spoilers, I guess.
Yeah.
You know.
I didn't like that, like, explanation that much, but I don't think it took away from the relationship.
Yeah. No, I would agree with you on that, because I know what you're talking about, and yeah, I would agree that I don't necessarily mind the explanation, but just the way it's kind of dropped in there. Like, just, like, a one-sentence type thing, and it's like,
it's
all right.
Like in
good thing we invented that oxygen machine.
Have you ever watched American Horror Story?
No, I haven't, actually.
In season three, it's witches, and the way you find out
and
the
Venom's
main
there.
Character is a witch is that she turns into a big goo monster. No.
Oh, so Venom actually is...
She has sex with her boyfriend. He dies. This is all within the first 3 minutes of episode one, and then she says the line, so it turns out I'm a witch. That was basically what that moment was for me. I was like, come on, try at all.
Yeah. If you spend 1 second thinking about this movie, it's over. Like, it's ruined.
Yeah, it's gone. You're
Plus, I read right before we got on here, I read a major plot hole, and I didn't even catch it in the movie, and I was like, damn, that's wild.
We'll get into it.
Yeah, we will. Yeah. But yeah, ultimately, I think the decision to stick to PG-13 is what really hurts this movie. Because this is a character who, like, bites people's heads off. And, like, I want to see that shit, you know?
Yeah.
I will say, though, the stuff that they nailed was, like, when he gets hurt on the motorcycle. And it's all his, like, joints kind of, his, like, leg unbending and all that stuff.
Right.
That was sick. Like, I was like, oh. Which I think is the reaction you should have watching a Venom movie.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think the motorcycle action scene is probably the highlight of the movie, like, or at least, like, in terms of, like, what's going on there. Like, it's messing around with the Venom powers and stuff like that. Like, it's cool.
It was awesome.
And I do, before we get into spoilers, I do want to say that this movie did really well at the box office this weekend.
Thank God.
Opened to, like, $80 million or something like that. And, good for Venom, I guess. Like, if they're going to do Venom 2, like, it's going to happen. So, you know, great.
Highest grossing October.
Yes, highest grossing October weekend, opening weekend, I think, ever. And we'll see how it does from here on out. Like, maybe word of mouth is bad and it'll tank or whatever. I'm a little bit worried about this success of Venom because Sony and Marvel had that deal with Spider-Man, right? Where Sony is lending Spider-Man to the MCU, keeping him in their universe. But that deal ends with Spider-Man Far From Home, which is the Spider-Man movie coming out next year. And if Sony thinks that, like, you know, well, we can do our own movies now because Venom was a huge hit and we have this, like, established Spider-Man, they might take Spider-Man out of the Marvel universe and bring him back into their own thing.
And, you think they're going to get a little too big for their britches?
I think they might because they're already planning.
Step up to the big dog?
They're already planning other villain spinoffs, and, like, Venom is one thing because Venom's already a pretty popular villain. Like, Venom was going to make money. But, like, they're planning, like, a Morbius the Living Vampire movie. They're planning...
Starring Jared Leto.
Yeah, they're planning a Kraven the Hunter movie, and it's like, none of these are going to be
starring Jared Leto.
Don't forget my Black Cat Silver Sable movie.
Black Cat Silver Sable, how could we forget?
Both played...
By Jared Leto. Actually, one's Jared Leto, one's James Gunn.
Full circle. And they both turned to dust like the hobos from...
All right, I think if we just work in a Shrek 5 joke, we can get in all the recurring jokes in real quick.
Nick, that one's on you. I'm not a part of that one.
I tried. I can't think of one.
Anyway, so I'm a little worried about that. You know, because I want Spider-Man to stay with Marvel. I want them to be able to keep using him in movies and stuff like that, even if they don't have him in Avengers movies anymore. Like, I kind of want Marvel to still have a creative voice in the Spider-Man solo movies.
I would love to see Eddie Brock in the MCU.
Sure. Yeah. I would be down for that too. I mean, the way this movie is set up, like, it doesn't reference, like, anything outside of what's going on in this movie, and that's good because, like, if the movie fails, then we can just ignore it. And if the movie is successful and it spawns, like, more movies, then you could theoretically integrate him. I mean, the reason the movie's set in San Francisco is because they didn't want anybody thinking, like, well, Spider-Man could show up at any moment.
Yeah, I definitely didn't think that in the movie. I wasn't disappointed when that may or may not have happened.
Well, I mean, spoilers for Infinity War, but like Spider-Man's kind of dead right now, so it's.
Oh, I just assumed this movie took place before that.
Yeah, maybe. I did too. Actually, I didn't even. I wasn't even thinking about Infinity Wars.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, because that's the thing. I mean, because this movie isn't like it doesn't take place in the MCU, but like if it does involve Tom Holland's Spider-Man, then like it must take place in the MCU. You, right? Like,
the math checks out.
There's no way around that. So, but nobody in the movie like acknowledged that half the people in the universe disappeared. So it's
yeah. That is like potentially
they were too busy talking
cataclysm.
About turds. What were they kidding?
Yeah,
they were too busy saying nonsense.
Too busy spouting nonsense. Yeah, you're right.
You know what this was like? It was like in Rick and Morty when Jerry is in the computer simulation that's running at 5%. That's what like the background people of this world were to me.
Yes,
my man,
looking good.
Human music.
Venom.
I like it. And that the human music is Eminem's Venom, obviously.
Of course.
Anyway, so it sounds like we all didn't like Venom. But, like, we didn't dislike watching it? Is that what I'm kind of getting out of this?
Yes.
I liked it. I'll lock in on that. I'll die on that hill.
Okay, yeah. Vin, you liked Venom. Me and Mike were both like, yeah, ish. Yeah. But
you guys are clearly the more reasonable of the people. I'm willing to acknowledge that.
Yeah. To be fair, I mean, I know many people who have seen Venom already. Everybody who I've talked to who has seen it likes the movie. So there's that. Maybe it's the children who are wrong, you know?
Yes.
But anyway, let's move on to spoilers for Venom, starting right now.
Stop it! You're spoiling everything!
All right, spoilers for Venom, starting right now. Hey guys, this week I watched a movie where a guy who looks like Tom Hardy suddenly develops super strength and an assortment of other insane powers thanks to a strange outside voice that has invaded his body, resulting in many action sequences where the guy is accidentally winning a bunch of fights and acting incredulous about it. But enough about Upgrade.
Welcome to the show, Vin. Thanks for joining us for the first time.
Oh no, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I did that the first time too. Damn. I wasn't even trying to steal your joke. I was just like, wait a minute.
Is this an actual question or a rhetorical question?
Venom and Upgrade are the same movie.
And I've heard Upgrade's much better.
Upgrade is so much better. Because Upgrade is like, you know, a tight 90-minute John Wick ripoff. This is like, you know.
A not-so-tight 80-minute Upgrade ripoff.
Yeah. Anyway, so Vin, you had something you wanted to get through. What did you want to say about Venom and spoilers?
Oh man, now I just feel really bad. I stepped into the thing.
We
explicitly spoke about it during the bumper, and I did it anyway. I'm like a little boy who just doesn't like understand the world.
Yeah, you're like Venom in some ways.
Oh, thank you. So we get to the end of the movie.
Yeah,
and it's Eddie Brock. We all knew coming into this that Woody Harrelson was in the movie.
And yes. Mike, did you know that?
I didn't know that, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
So two-thirds, statistically speaking, 66% of people knew that Woody Harrelson was in this movie.
Yeah.
And he had come out, and he was like, yeah, I'm in like a minute of it, but I'm going to be in the sequel. So everybody was like, dope. He's probably going to play Carnage.
Yeah.
Cletus Cassidy. And Eddie Brock, mid-credit scene, shows up at San Quentin where, you know, known stomping grounds of Cletus Cassidy, psycho killer. And he walks in, and you see Woody Harrelson, but he's not Cletus Cassidy. He's Little Orphan Annie with those curly, with what I'm going to call the worst red wig I've ever seen in a mainstream movie.
Okay, so this is the super important thing that you felt you needed to get out there.
This is why I ruined your thing. Oh, no, this is not the plot hole. This is something that I just found infinitely amusing.
Oh, okay.
He looked ridiculous. He looked like Ronald McDonald sans makeup.
Yes.
I mean, he did look
and
ridiculous.
Then he says the line. He's like, when I get out, and I will get out, there's going to be... He might as well have paused, look right down lens.
Yeah, honestly.
Carnage.
Yeah, Woody Harrelson is Carnage. He'll be in the sequel. That is the first post-credit scene of this movie. And yeah, I mean, as far as post-credit scenes go, I think it's a solid tease for Venom 2. You know, I'm down for Woody Harrelson playing Carnage. I think it's good casting.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and it's a cool, like, little Hannibal Lecter thing he's got going on in that cell. So, like, yeah, I was kind of down for that. What did you think, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was fine. I was excited. When he turned around, I was like, oh, shit, it's Woody Harrelson. What did they do to you, Woody?
why are you here?
But
I think he's just on a quest to be in every franchise movie from now until the end of time.
I thought your joke was going to be statistically Woody Harrelson is in 66% of movies.
you're not wrong.
But when he just turns around and's like, there's going to be Carnage, I was expecting like him to wink and it to be like, ding, you know. Like
that. And then it's like, it pulls back to the wide shot and Eddie Brock's like, who are you talking to? Why are you saying that?
I'm not very well versed in my Venom lore. You know, I'm culturally obviously aware of the character, and Carnage is the red one. I know that much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all you need. Like,
okay.
He's like Venom was a serial killer.
Yeah, I mean, well, Venom is a serial killer.
Venom eats people. Can you get
worse than that? But Venom is like an anti-hero serial killer.
Oh, okay.
Eventually he became an anti-hero. He started off as a pretty hardcore villain for a long time.
He's a sympathetic serial killer.
Yeah. One of those lovely
But he's cute. Those big teeth. I don't know.
Yeah, and his goopiness.
Oh, all that he leaves a snail trail everywhere he goes.
But also
the
like,
easiest
the internet
person to find.
The internet just has a giant boner for him, so like do you weird fetish people.
I made a joke in the middle of the movie. I was like, you think Tom Hardy after all this is gonna jerk off with the Venom hand?
Oh, stop it. That's enough of that.
I'm sure they're going to explore that in Venom 2.
Can't wait for the porn parody.
I did want to talk about the second post-credit scene of this movie, which is the best scene of the movie.
Made me very mad.
partially because it's not part of this movie. It's an extended look at Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which I'm very excited about, and it's better than anything that happens in Venom.
Yes.
So yeah, just wanted to kind of briefly give that a shout-out because it was awesome. I'm so excited for that movie.
Yeah.
I like that the Peter Parker in that universe is now speculated to be Sam Raimi's Peter Parker.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like in the trailer, like, it shows, like, you know, shots of him doing stuff from the Sam Raimi movies. He has, like, the train thing, and he's doing, like, the thing where the car goes through the window, the upside-down kiss. It's Jake Johnson voicing Peter Parker, but I really wish they had gotten Tobey Maguire to voice
amazing.
Peter Parker. That would have been crazy. But anyway,
maybe a cameo.
You never know. I mean, it's a Spider-Verse. Anything can happen. I would love if they had, like, Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, and Tom Holland just, like, all thrown into, like, one scene together. Just, you know, be incredible. But anyway, yeah. So Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse looks awesome. The scene that they showed was great. And it left me leaving the theater on a happy note, so I can say that at least.
They did plan that well.
I felt like I wanted to leave on a happy note, but I felt just so, like robbed of my unsulliedness, and it had to come from this movie. Like, I was so mad that Venom was the thing that showed me an extended scene from this movie I'm very excited for.
Fair enough. But
Venom ran over your dog, but he put a $100 bill in your mailbox.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. I know the people I know who liked Venom, I was messaging them the other day, and I was like, yeah, I wasn't a big fan of Venom. I thought the Spider-Verse scene was the best scene of the movie. And they were like, oh, we walked out of the Spider-Verse scene. I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you people?
You know what's really funny is I remember, like, at the end of the movie, I watched the Spider-Verse thing, and I leaned over. I was with a friend of the podcast, PJ Krause, and other people.
Nick was with you, too, right? Because he was,
yes, Nick
he was
there.
He was one of the people I was messaging.
100%. I didn't care for the preview of Into the Spider-Verse.
You didn't?
Some reason, I kind of just wanted to get out of the theater.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I think it's
pretty long.
It was a lot. It was a lot. Yeah. And I'm still going to see the movie.
I mean, it was a long scene. Also, the credits are really long. And
they were.
Getting to that scene was a lot. But I was so delighted by everything in that scene, though. Like, I was like, just play me the whole movie right now. I'm fine with that.
Let's do it. Double feature.
That actually would have been the best post-credit scene of all time, is they just played the entirety of Spider-Man.
That's so funny.
Oh, my God.
People are like, yeah, we walked out. I don't understand why they're only showing Venom once every 4 hours.
Anyway, so let's get back to the actual movie that we're talking about today instead of the one that's coming out 2 months from now. Now, Vin, you had like a plot hole you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. Venom, or so the main villain in this movie, Riot, his whole thing is he could jump from person to person, which it seems like any of them can do.
Right.
Not just Riot. But Riot jumps into the older woman, right, after he's the, like, the woman from the ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6 months goes by, and he's still that woman. Seemingly, time has not passed there.
Yeah, well, it's a weird thing. Like, why does it take that symbiote 6 months to get to California? Because it seems like the symbiotes can travel pretty fast. Like, even when they're, you know, in, like, weird bodies or whatever. Like, you know, Eddie Brock, you know, is jumping around buildings and shit. And stuff like that. And this symbiote is, you know, taking over bodies left and right. You know, it took them 6 months to get to, like, the airport, I think.
That's 6 months.
They jumped into a body that had no directional awareness.
Well,
they jumped into a body with dementia.
I thought it was. You're not wrong. For a while, like, I was like, oh, you know, it's taking this long because it doesn't understand Earth, right? Like, it doesn't know, like, the alien doesn't know where it's going and, like, all this stuff. But then, like Vin alluded to earlier, Venom makes a pussy joke. It just fully understands English, has a British accent, understands jokes, like, can just do all this shit, and it's like, what? Like, there's no internal logic. All the other symbiotes immediately kill their hosts. I get Venom and Eddie Brock are, like, you know, imprinted on each other.
Because they're both losers.
Yeah, they're fucking nerds. Venom just, I can imagine Venom getting, like, locker stuffed.
By the other symbiote in the class.
Yeah. Oh. But anyway,
come on, nerd. You guys.
Riot, I mean, I guess that's a thing. But really, we only see it go through, like, 2, 3, or 4 hosts. And I don't know. It was very weird. Also, Venom, like, there's no logic between which ones can bond and which ones can't. Because Venom bonds to Annie and she's not dead.
Yes. Yeah, that's what every other time a symbiote bonds to somebody, they die, right? Like, throughout the movie. And then at one point, Venom gets separated from Eddie Brock. Eddie ends up somewhere else, and he ends up bonding to Michelle Williams, and she turns into, like, sexy Lady Venom.
Which
for, like,
weird and uncomfortable.
Lady Venom can get it.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's weird and I'm uncomfortable with it.
Yes, exactly.
Totally,
I need to say this, and I'm almost hesitant to say this, but, like, God, I don't want to say the name of the person who did this. Because I think that they're great, and God bless their sweetheart. But we were watching the movie, and Lady Venom walked on the screen, and he was like, wait, what woman is that? And I literally looked at him, and I was like, are you fucking kidding me right now? I was like, what? What do you mean, what woman is that?
Is it the only one?
He was like, but isn't it? It was in the dog. And I was like, dude, we just spent the past hour and 40 minutes watching symbiotes go from person to person. Like, how is this hard for you to grasp?
But yeah, so she turns into, like, I will say, you know, I, like, the part of the internet that thinks Venom is, like, really hot, like, I didn't get until Sexy Lady Venom showed up. I was like, okay, I get it. But
it's conflicting.
It's weird.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah, I don't know why that didn't kill Michelle Williams as soon as he left her body, because it seemed like that happened with everything else. It implies
that because
dog was gonna die, right?
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of the least disgusting way to say this. Maybe,
sexism? Yeah, you're
like,
right.
No. I was gonna say, like, all right. So her and Eddie Brock were a couple, and and if Eddie's DNA was able to get
that's enough
from when they were kissing.
Oh yeah, that's what it was.
Okay, yeah, because there's that scene where Eddie makes out with Venom, right?
Maybe they tried to have a baby. I don't know. I don't know their life. I don't know why they broke up.
We can cut that out.
We do know why they broke up. We definitely know why they broke up.
That's pretty clear. That's pretty clear in the movie.
I don't know, man. I didn't read.
Anyway, Ben, you did mention that Venom is a loser on his home planet, and that's kind of like the reason why he decides to bond with Eddie, because Eddie's also a loser. And yeah, I don't know. Just the way that came about in the movie, like the way that explanation came about, it was just like Venom, like, really quickly, he's like, oh, I'm also a loser on my planet, so I guess we're friends now.
But he's even cornier than that. He's
with
like,
that voice.
Why did you decide to stay? And he was like, you. He went full Christian Bale circa 2008. He's like, I stayed because of you, Eddie. Where's Lau?
Where's the trigger? I believe that's also Christian Bale circa 2018 playing Dick Cheney, but...
yeah. Oh my god, Bear.
Anyway, yeah, so just the way that came about, it was very weird and very rushed. And that's kind of the thing. I feel like, you know, this movie takes so much time setting up Venom getting into Tom Hardy. And then it just rushes through all the Venom shit. And the Venom shit is, like, why we're there. Like, that's the reason this movie exists. Like, I want to see some Venom shit. Like, I want to see more stuff like Tom Hardy just eating a frozen bag of tater tots. That, to me, is the movie.
Or, like, banging on his neighbor's door because his music's too loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the movie to me. I want to see more of Tom Hardy just trying to get by day to day.
Struggling through life.
But I will say, the restaurant scene where he's, like, going crazy was so good.
That's the scene that Mike wanted to talk about.
Yes, that's the scene Mike told me the on-set story. Apparently, Tom Hardy, like, improvised a lot of stuff, obviously, when he's, like, you know, shoving tater tots in his face. And apparently, they walked into that set, and that lobster tank was there, and he said, I'm going to end up in that tank at the end of the scene. And they just did it. And they just, like...
Yeah. And that's the thing. They had to, like, overnight a bunch of, like, fake lobsters because they couldn't, like, you know, have him in a tank with real lobsters and stuff like that.
I thought you were going to say he accidentally ate a real lobster.
Oh, no.
No, but just that he would improvise that much. And, I mean, that scene is bonkers. Like, that's a cage level freak out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, apparently, like, 40 minutes of this movie were cut.
Yeah, apparently Tom Hardy's favorite 40 minutes.
Which presumably, like, are more of that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is.
There's originally a lobster tank in his apartment, in his office.
It's lobsters all the way down.
Venom v. Lobsters, Dawn of Crustaceans.
I'm in. I would watch
Volume
that Godzilla
2.
Movie.
Volume 2, directed by James Gunn. Yeah. Honestly, I saw somebody, like, tweeting it. I think it was Matt Singer who started, like, kind of jokingly tweeting out, release the Hardy cut.
That would be amazing.
Because, yeah, I mean, if there's, like, 40 minutes of, like, Hardy freaking out that's on the cutting room floor, like, that to me is the movie that I want to see. And I feel like there's some of that in this movie, and what we get is pretty fun. But I would rather just, like, have a whole movie of that. Like, that's kind of what I was hoping I was signing up for when I got into Venom. And was kind of disappointed when it was, like, an hour of nothing.
Yeah.
I gotta say, though, normally, as much as I did voice my frustration with them doing that, at the time of watching the movie, I was totally engrossed with Tom Hardy's performance as, like, regular Eddie Brock.
Okay.
That the first hour really flew by, and by the time Venom did show up, I asked somebody who had a watch near me. I was like, what time, like, how long have we been in here? And they were like, about an hour. I was like, that's wild.
It's wild that you felt that way.
I'm fully willing to accept that.
Because that's the part of the movie that made me just like, yearn for, like, a spotlight-level investigative journalism. Like, give me this hard, like, thriller, you know, corporate espionage stuff. And it's just, like, not.
Right.
And I know it's you know that.
This is really, though, that's the kind of stuff where it's, like, it seems like the movie was written in 24 hours. Where they're, like, Eddie... you know, interior, room, day. Eddie stumbles upon his girlfriend's laptop and sees an email titled, Secret Stuff, Don't Read.
Plot happens.
Plot happens here. Question mark.
Progeny slate, you know?
Oh, yeah, she just gets killed off halfway through. Like, it's nothing. Do you see her death scene? I went to the bathroom midway through the movie.
You see her body, but she happens off. It happens off screen.
It happens off screen, yeah. That was a bummer for sure. I do want to give this movie credit for one thing. It's a small thing. I did like the way it foreshadows the homeless woman Maria being held in the lab.
Yeah, that was cool.
Where, like, you know, he shows up in the lab and she's there. She's like, Eddie. But, like, early in the movie when you see her, like, for the first time, he's, like, walking past. And it's clear he sees her, like, every day there and stuff. And then, like, later on, he walks past that same street and her stuff is there, but she's not. And it's, like, a weird, like, ooh, where did she go? And then you see her in the lab. So I like the way they kind of foreshadowed that. I want to give the movie a little bit of props for that one specific bit of foreshadowing.
It definitely felt like another Tom Hardy improv, though, when he was like, hey, I'll give you $20 not to sing. Hey, yeah. I'm crazy.
I like that your San Francisco Eddie Brock is a New York accent.
Well, no, he's from... Isn't he doing a New York accent the whole time?
I feel like... I mean, I
yeah,
like
remember they talk about he got run out of New York from his stint at the Daily Globe?
Right, right, right.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I got fired for doing too much pizza. You know, he talks like that.
I'm walking here.
I will say I didn't get New York from his accent, but I'm not really sure what I got from his accent either.
It wasn't consistent at all.
It was just kind of like this high-pitched kind of like it. There's a little bit of like I would say it's a mix of Sylvester Stallone and Rocky and. And Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And like exactly. Raccoons digging through garbage.
Yeah, a little bit of that too.
Hey, I'm a superhero. Dig, 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 dig.
Yeah. that's actually a pretty good Rocky Raccoon now that you're talking about it. Hey. Also, I do want to mention, this was weird. The very last scene of this movie is like the centerpiece of the trailer.
I'm so and happy you brought that up. Because Sony has done this before with Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah.
With the rhino.
Yeah, where he's fighting the rhino and he swings the manhole cover, and that's what leads to the credits.
Right. And then I think even part of the mid-credits, like part of the post-credits scene in Amazing Spider-Man 2 was also in the trailer for that movie. I remember the scene of like the guy walking past the vulture wings or whatever. And the dog arms. That was in the trailer of the movie. Yeah. You're right. No, that's...
they love doing that.
Yeah, but this was literally, like, the centerpiece of this trailer. Like, the last, like, 30 seconds of that trailer was that scene in the deli and, like, you know, it's Venom going, like, the turn, the wind, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that whole scene is the last scene of the movie, and then it ends with more lines that were in the trailer. Like, we gotta set up some ground rules, you know, that kind of thing. Like, don't eat people or something like that.
They were like, quick, people might be confused if they hear these lines and then they're not in the movie. The opposite approach Marvel is taking right now.
Right.
Like with the MCU.
Throw a bunch of fake stuff in the trailer. Yeah. Throw them off the scent. Which I gotta say, I prefer very much. I'm a big fan of that tactic.
I don't know, man. Tom Hardy talking about poop.
You're not wrong.
I mean, fair.
I do want to shout out, not only did this movie is this movie a shitty upgrade remake, it also ripped off A Quiet Place, where the big hulking monster is defeated by a slowly turned up volume at the very end of the movie.
I mean, that's true. There's also, I feel like there's no real way around that, because that is like the main weakness of these symbiotes is loud noises.
That's fair. It just was done so much better and way cooler in
A
Quiet Place. And I was just like, nope, not doing it.
Yeah, fair enough. Also wanted to throw out there that the evil corporation in this movie is called the Life Foundation, which I know is a comics thing, but I'm choosing to believe it's a reference to how the movie Life was rumored to be a secret Venom prequel for a while.
You know what's funny? I didn't know that was like a thing from the comics. So like when that secret Venom prequel thing was coming, I thought it was just like a joke because it's about like a weird alien life form.
Right.
And then like that first... like shuttle before the credit, like in the very opening scene,
it says like, Life, and you were like, "Oh shit, was it really a prequel?"
Well, I knew it wasn't really a prequel, but I was like, "Wait, what? There was actually merit to that?"
Yeah.
But I also thought it was just like the name of the other movie. I was like, "Wait, what?"
The first scene where he does turn into Venom in the street and he does bite that dude's head off.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. No, I was into a lot of the Venom action scenes, you know, definitely. And, yeah, he bites a dude's head off. I'm like, sure, I'm into that.
I will say that I think Mike was right, though, that the car chase, the motorcycle chase, is, like, the highlight action scene because it's both Venom and Eddie Brock. For me, a lot of the other scenes where it's just Venom was that, like, shitty shaky cam, we can't see anything because it'd be expensive to have to CGI this character in every scene. where, like, it's a smoke cloud, and now there's just guys shooting.
That scene was cool. And I was pretty underwhelmed by the final fight between Venom and Riot also, just because it's, like, it's just a mishmash of CGI, like, and it was dark, and, like, nothing looked cool, and, you know, like, you know, I think the Venom and Riot symbiotes look good, but, like, it's just... You know, it's just CGI fighting CGI, and, like, you can tell that it's not, you know.
Also, Tom Hardy could totally take Riz Ahmed in a fist fight. I'm sorry. I think.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. Riot was attached to Riz Ahmed, and he had, like, more stuff.
There's a brief moment in there where they're just, like...
Where they, like, split apart,
fisticuffs in each other, yeah.
Right, yes, yeah.
It's right before they conveniently blow up the spaceship.
Right.
Which seems like the easiest thing to do.
Like, why didn't you do that in the first place?
I'm just like, you're telling me this whole time you could have just cut through the gas tank, and our plan was not to sneak around the back. Our plan was to charge at the front door.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, is there anything else in the movie you guys want to talk about before we wrap this up?
Shouts to Mrs. Chen. She's great.
Yeah, fair enough. I like Mrs. Chen, too.
Shout out to, is it Dan or Dave? The doctor boyfriend who's the guy from...
The guy from Veep?
The guy from
Veep. Oh, he was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was solid.
You know, I just
at no
him
point
to, like,
was he like, are you guys still like... You guys aren't like doing it, right? He was just like, "Yeah, go save him."
Or I just wanted him to like quickly yell curses at somebody, but he never did it.
Yeah, actually, I will say towards the end of the movie, like, you know, after everything has like come apart, Eddie makes it seem like Venom's no longer a part of him, but he is, and he like hints at it towards Michelle Williams, and then he walks away, and it's like, but she doesn't seem like that upset about it. She seems more like exasperated, like. Here he goes again with that Venom guy.
She seems like jealous, right? She's like, I want that goop. Like, it's really weird.
And then you have the Stan Lee cameo, which, you know, he says, like, both of you keep an eye out. And I was like, wait, how does this random passersby know that he has
dementia is running rampant in the old people in this movie.
It only confirms the he's one of the Watcher guys or whatever.
Right. Oh, for sure. I wasn't even expecting a Stan Lee cameo in this one.
Right.
I was a little just like, oh, yeah. This is the first one I wasn't excited that when I saw him.
He was just kind of there, yeah.
I was just like, oh, yeah, all right, let's get this over with.
Yeah, well, I feel like Stan Lee has cameoed in other like, non-Marvel Studios movies before. But since Marvel Studios has started making movies, there's a lot less Stan Lee cameos outside of those movies. So it is kind of like surprising when he shows up in like a Sony movie and it's like, hey, it's Stan Lee. Hey, he's here.
Look at
cool.
That.
But anyway, yeah. So I think that about wraps up our thoughts on Venom, guys. Vin, you were a fan.
I was. I definitely was. I'm looking forward to being able to watch this movie again and dislike it more with each rewatch.
And I look forward to probably never watching it again, but I'll see Venom 2 when it comes out because, like, fuck it, I'm weak. Mike, how about you?
Yeah, I was gonna say I can't wait to never think about this movie again, but like I'm gonna have to.
But dude,
that's how I feel about it. Symbiote.
Yeah, well, hey, by the way, we should say that they fixed that pronunciation in the movie. I think they redubbed it or something.
They did, yeah.
But in the original trailer of Venom, you hear Jenny Slate saying symbiotes. And the internet dunked on that immensely. Like, everybody's like, it's fucking symbiotes.
They took it to the house.
Movie, yeah, and then when you get to the actual movie, it looks like Sony heard what Twitter was saying and was like, we should redub this.
Yeah, but he like knocks on his door and it's open and she swings open his door. And there he is in bed with the Venom hand. Just the hand.
In the second
just going
movie,
for it.
If they could like really lean into like the weird fetish shit. Just like be self-aware.
If Venom helped like, him pick up chess, I would watch that buddy comedy. Like Venom is the hormone monster from.
Stop it. No.
That's
not
the
what
movie I want to see.
That's not what I meant.
All right. That about wraps up for today. Guys. All right, Zane, where can we find you online this week?
Oh, boy. Krebuland Productions on YouTube, at Vincent J. Craig on Twitter, at Vin Craig on Instagram. And I have my first feature is coming out. It's going to be released in Newburgh for the premiere, I think. There are going to be tickets available, and that is called Slate Yourself, directed by Justin Van Voorhees, written and directed. And that's just a super fun project that I got to be a part of.
And Mike, how about you?
You can find me at MDFilmBlog on Twitter.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/MSmithFilmBlog and all our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. Stick around. In 2 weeks, we're going to be reviewing David Gordon Green's Halloween. Very excited about that one. And then next week for the complete works, we are talking Nicolas Cage's role in 2012's Seeking Justice with Guy Pearce and January Jones. Thanks so much for listening to Film Bookcast. We are out. I said knock knock, let the devil in. Shotgun, pip-pip pellets in the felt pin. Cock, look around and catch a hot one. It's evident I'm not done. Vic Venom is the thought spun like a web and you're discarding them. Held against your will like a hubcap or a mud flap. Beat strangler attack, so this ain't gonna feel like a love tap.